from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is The Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Chris Hendricks.
Now, as some of you may have known, I am now in Calgary, Alberta, in Cowtown, ladies and gentlemen. So for the next couple shows, we're going to have Carissa as my co-host. Now, when you came down close to Christmas time, everybody had such a great time that and everybody's like, oh, make sure she comes on the show again. Didn't you even get one person that emailed you personally saying, can you get Jacob to make sure that...
Yeah, they sent me a personal reference. Hey, can you send this email to Jacob so that he knows that we like you?
It's funny because...
Or I could just tell him.
It's really funny because I think it just shows how poorly I've managed to design my website that no one is able to email me. It's quite pathetic, actually. I'm going to change that soon, I swear. I'm usually too busy creating podcasts and other things.
So when did this problem come up, Jacob?
What problem of not being properly, having the site properly designed?
Yes.
It came up when I first put it up because I didn't know how to put it on
no,
there.
No, I mean, you figured out that it's hard for you to get contacted by your fans.
Right.
When? Yeah, a month ago when I was in Montreal?
No, I knew before then.
Still nothing?
I knew before then that it was difficult. But I figured the people who really want to contact me, they can figure it out. I mean, it is available out there. If you go to the membership section in the on the site, my email address is there. So the honest truth is that most of the time people who are confused is just because it's not one click away. And you know how people are nowadays. It's like it's either one click away or it might as well not exist.
Yeah, well, there's some normal navigation things. I mean, it should be under the Contact Us section. There has become some expected parts
I think
of
that
web
we've become
design.
Lazy browsers.
I think
that's
we've
the
always
problem.
Been lazy.
Who? Us as human beings?
We've always been lazy. You need to cater to the lazy...
I think actually laziness makes sense. Evolutionarily, laziness is good if you think about it. Because, all right, factor this. You ever look at a cat? Like, look at your cat right now. There he is on your bed. He's sitting. He's lying down. He's totally sleeping. He looks useless. But if you think about it,
he's being quite adorable.
He is quite adorable. But if you think about it in nature, most of the time, if you're a predator, you're not going to be spending your time trying to hunt because... It's really only a small portion of your day or even your whole week might be devoted to hunting, and the rest of the time it's conserving energy. And what's the best way to make sure that you conserve energy? To be lazy. So I think there is a kind of like an evolutionary attraction to doing nothing because, you know, in a world where there's a limited amount of calories out there, you should be lazy.
So then maybe you should make it easier for people to contact you.
Well, it's just an evolutionary thing. We're more violent than some of our primate cousins because...
I love how you justify the action, but you're not catering to it at all. I think we're naturally lazy, but fuck you for being lazy.
No, I say there's an evolutionary advantage to being lazy. There's an evolutionary advantage, but at the same time, there's a huge disadvantage in being lazy. Well, at least for us, because... You know, in the long evolution of our species, it was probably a good idea once in a while to be sort of lazy. Like, if you look at hunter-gatherer societies, even sort of like some of the societies that exist, like, you know, in New Zealand, some of these really isolated areas where they were just hunting and gathering, they didn't work a lot. You know, they don't need to spend all day toiling at a field or something like that. They live in fucking paradise where there's fruit, nuts everywhere, and where they just have to club... I don't know, whatever animal walks close to them. I mean, talk about a Garden of Eden right there, right? Well, these cultures still exist, although they are very rare now.
I just had this image of, like, a duck walking by and looking at them and just smashing them on the head and putting them on the fire.
Yeah, well, it's a pretty sweet thing when you can get... Okay, let's talk...
Wow, off topic already.
You know what? I'm just going to skip this topic altogether because I have no answers. When are you going to put up a contact button? I don't know. When I figure out how to do that, I'm not very good. On today's show, we're going to be talking about, are atheists brainwashed? We'll also be talking about whether or not Catholic priests are allowed to marry people on cruise ships. And finally, we'll what's our third topic?
Young kids are less religious than their parents.
Yeah, we'll be talking about whether or not religiosity is on its way down, everybody. But first, let's talk about whether or not atheists are brainwashed. There was a post, there was an article that I found, and I wrote about this. It was from ChristianPosts.com. It's a relatively small site. But once in a while, you get these small sites that have little gems, little articles that people write. And you know, of course, that there are plenty of Christians out there who like to write and say, number one, atheists are as dogmatic as us. Number two, they're totally brainwashed and they don't know anything. And what I found in particular that was really interesting about this article is because I've seen a lot of arguments saying that we were just as dogmatic or that atheism is a religion. We've seen these before, but it's actually the first time I've really read an attempt, and I will use that word, attempt, to try to prove that we're brainwashed. Now, what can you summarize a little bit of what you thought the article was trying to present? Because you mentioned it, you're like, this is really hard to read, and not because it's like scholarly.
No, it's because it's all over the place. You just want me to summarize it so you know I actually read it.
No, I don't want to do all the talking. Okay. As the host, you have to have some responsibility.
Okay. Well, what they were kind of saying was, I think he was trying to get across that atheists are brainwashed into thinking that because science is this scholarly pursuit where we try and prove ourselves wrong, that atheists are not susceptible to the desire to be right. I'm pretty sure that is a way more eloquent version of what he was trying to say. He was trying to say that atheists are brainwashed into thinking that we, you know, if evidence came around that God existed, we would resist it, and we would fight against it because it would hurt our pride and meh. So I don't know. I think he was trying to say that we're just as biased as the Catholics, which is interesting because it's like, then doesn't that mean that religious people are brainwashed too, according to your
definition? That is what I always love about these types of articles, because you'll go to a site and say, well, atheism is a religion, and at the end of it, you're kind of the way that they're arguing, saying, well, you seem to paint. Even if it was true, the way you paint it seems to suggest that that's a bad thing or that you're being dogmatic. I'm like, we agree that dogmatism is bad. We sincerely don't like being painted in the same light as you, but we find it quite hilarious that you try to suggest that it is just exactly the same. You're like, oh, you're just as dogmatic as us. Why would you want to acknowledge the fact that you're dogmatic? Why is this?
Well, I love what you were saying.
Something positive.
The example they give is a scientist who finds really strong evidence that God exists, and he's like, oh, he would be so ashamed to tell NASA. And I'm like, what scientist just has NASA on speed dial, first of all?
No, it wasn't NASA. It was the National Academy of Science.
Yeah. Because that's what you do. That's the first. Oh, there's proof in God. I'm just going to call my buddy.
At the NAS.
Whatevs.
And tell him,
That's how science works. But
you call your buddies.
But what I loved about that was what you said, where actually, no. If you found irrefutable evidence that God existed, you would tell everybody as a scientist because you would be the new genius.
I know.
Atheists would love to believe in religion. It's all flaky and awesome, and then no responsibility, no fear of death. Sounds good to me. It's just not real, so we can't, because we have integrity. That's the only problem.
Well, I've always suggested that intellectual integrity is antithetical to religion, just because if you mm-hmm. really start asking yourself some questions like, hey, why is the Bible contradictory? Or why do bad things happen if God is supposedly good? Or, I mean, I'm not even going to go into the myriad of reasons why religion is ridiculous. But still, at the end of the day, I had put a video about a Christian guy called Deconversion. I think it's a 6 or 7 part video. I didn't put all of them there, but if you go to the site and you find it, it's really quite good, because this guy, the guy who's talking, is very intelligent, and the way that he tries to understand, I guess, the problems in his religion strikes me as sort of that example of, he has intellectual integrity, and even the person that he's talking to, which is this professor, suggests, well, maybe it's not a really good idea. Maybe you don't want me to question some of these things, because then you can't take it back. You know, if it gives your life meaning, maybe that's all you need. But if you really start probing deeper and deeper, you're going to find that everything starts to crumble around you. And the other interesting thing that he felt was that other people in his church he thought to himself, well, you know, they don't seem to have the same degree of curiosity that I do. You know, they'll normally accept things on face value, but I can't be satisfied with that. And I think that is what that represents. This is a type of the intellectual integrity is the desire to see to its fulfillment an idea. Like, I need to have answers, and religion has no answers, or all its answers that it does pretend to have are not satisfactory if you have intellectual integrity.
I think that's the best way to put it. I find that religion's answers are just not satisfying. Because to say that religion doesn't have answers is not really fair. It has answers. They're just, they don't give you any sense of satisfaction. You're like, oh, God did it. That's not really, I don't feel like that's the end of that question.
I know.
And God?
And think about this. I was reading Kenneth R. Miller's book, Finding Darwin's God. My sister actually got this for me. My sister Melissa always has the best fucking selection of books. She always gets me good books. Like, I don't even know how she knows that I'm going to find something interesting and fascinating, because everybody else is always like, you're really hard to shop for. I'm like, just get me a damn book. And I'm like, you guys know that I'm interested in many topics. What's so hard about finding a good book? But she usually doesn't. But with this one, I was surprised, because this is a book that tries to argue that evolution and religion don't conflict. That in fact, you can be religious and still believe in evolution. And Ken Miller is not just a deist, you know, saying like, oh, well, God was there and he just sort of set everything in motion. He's a Christian. He's a Catholic. All right. Is he a Catholic? I don't know if he's a Catholic, but he for sure is a Christian. He believes in Jesus, the resurrection, the virgin birth, all that shit. Ugh. He believes in it all. And what was really interesting about the book, I do recommend it, at least the first two thirds of the book, because it really is interesting the way that he smacks down, creationists. If you recall, you remember the Dover, Pennsylvania trials? Do you recall this at all?
Maybe.
No? Maybe? Okay. So let me give you a little bit of a rundown. In Dover, Pennsylvania, I think it was in 2004, the school board there was trying to introduce intelligent design in the classroom, and it went to trial. And they had called in a whole bunch of experts on evolution, and they had actually called in all the experts on so-called intelligent design. So Michael Behe, William Dembski, they were all there. And the whole purpose was to try to identify whether or not intelligent design was itself a science or if it wasn't. And Ken was one of the people who was championing, evolution. And part of the reason they chose him was obviously because he's religious and says, well, there is no inherent conflict between believing in evolution and believing in religion. And what's really interesting about this book is the argument that he tries to use. Miller's argument is this. Is that, first of all, quantum indeterminacy, the inability for us to be able to know at any time what the spin or the momentum of an electron is, means that the universe will always remain mysterious. Like, it's not like in classical physics where we thought we could know the position of all matter and therefore we could predict the future based on that. Well, when it turns out that everything in the microscopic world is a matter of probability, that is no longer possible. So for Ken Miller, that just means, well, God is the ultimate decider of this. He operates within this mysterious realm, which is ironic.
God of the gaps.
Ironic, because he criticizes creationists for using God in the gaps argument. In fact, he uses an argument when he was a kid and he went to church and his pastor was saying, oh, look at this flower. Well, there's no way that anyone can explain why flowers exist. Therefore, it's God that made them. Now, neither the pastor nor he as a child understood that, well, really, flowers are just leaves that have mutated. And just actually, when he found that out, he was telling himself, oh, you know, it's a shame that the pastor tried to use this God in the gap arguments. And I'm thinking, Ken, you're doing the same thing here, man.
God is in the tiny amount of probability of stuff that we cannot measure. Is this a thing we can't measure? Then God must be there.
Right. Even he admits that that's not necessarily proof that God exists. And he also uses the anthropic principle. If you're not aware of what that is, it's basically this idea that all of the say the strong nuclear force, the weak nuclear force, electromagnetism, and gravity. If any of those forces were changed ever so slightly, like if gravity was a little bit stronger, a little bit weaker, then, if it was weaker, then galaxies would have never formed and there would only be, hydrogen gas in the entire universe. Yeah. Or if it was stronger, then things would collapse into each other themselves.
Isn't that the Goldilocks? The Goldilocks numbers or something?
I don't remember what it what the term for it is. But anyways, that's the anthropic principle of saying, well, the universe is fine-tuned for life. And that's another one of the arguments that he uses, because they're like, well, it could have been any other way. The reason that it is this way is in order for a creator god to be able to have a species that's intelligent enough to understand him and to appreciate him.
But, okay, the big flaws with that principle is that, one, we don't know that some other system of numbers wouldn't work. We don't. I mean,
well, we also don't know how they might interrelate. Like, if you switch the strong nuclear force and that suddenly means that the weak nuclear force is stronger or weaker, does that suddenly change everything about the universe? But we're making lots of assumptions, mm-hmm. and even the numbers could be tweaked a little bit. They're not, like, tweak it one tiny bit and it all collapses. Even people who argue for the anthropic principle will admit that, well, there is a tiny bit of playroom. There's a little bit of playroom.
Well, and the other thing you can think about is, you know, we don't know. It looks perfect so far. But for all we know, maybe gravity's a little too strong and eventually everything will get crushed. Or
maybe it's not weak enough.
Yeah, or maybe it's not strong enough and everything will, you know, keep running apart until there's no heat and energy in life and everybody dies. In fact, that's probably what will happen.
Yeah, cold death. So in about, I think it's 100 trillion years, there will be basically no more energy transfer. It'll just be a really boring ass universe.
Exactly. So you're saying that a god created a universe where it would be perfect for life for a little while and then there'd be nothing forever and ever and ever and ever and ever, so that he could spend all of eternity by himself. Stupid head.
I also think it's really...
This god is not worthy of our worship.
I also think he doesn't really answer the very important question of saying, well, if the human race is roughly 100,000 years old, then why exactly would he choose to communicate with it 98,000 years later? And not only that, are you saying that all of those human beings that existed before are now burning in fucking hell? Because God's like, well, now's not the time. I'm like, there is nothing fundamentally different about you and your ancestor 100,000 years ago. You could travel back in time, steal one of their babies, and raise it now, and it would be exactly the same.
You know what, Kate? You know what was interesting when I was reading that article that you were forcing me to read?
Forcing?
was I had this English teacher growing up. And he would make you read things a specific way. He'd make you read them with your thesis in mind. So when you'd read Shakespeare, you'd try and figure out what Shakespeare was trying to say or what you wanted to say Shakespeare was trying to say. And I think I still have that part of... There's a part of my brain that has been, you know...
Messed.
Hijacked by that English teacher that's always doing that. And I found when I was reading that article and thinking about the title that he used for his article, the How to Spot a Brainwashed Atheist... I was thinking, you know what, you could so easily use that title and misquote some of the information in this article, because it's so all over the place, to say that the way you spot a brainwashed atheist is if they're a Catholic. Because a Catholic is just a brainwashed atheist. Everybody is inherently an atheist, but if you're brainwashed, then you're religious. Just because there's so much in that article that's like, oh, well, you know, atheists are brainwashed into thinking that they're better than us. And it's like, but so are Catholics.
Well, his qualifications for brainwashed is merely that you don't like being wrong.
Yeah, and it's like, who likes being wrong?
I don't like it. I don't like it at all. And you know what? For all of you listeners, you know what I'm wrong. In fact, once in a while, I always get an email of a person says, oh, you mentioned that prima nocte was something real and it's not. And I cringed when you said that. And I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's not. That was actually Ryan who said it. But hey, what? I've been wrong too. Okay, I'm not saying that.
Your example is not even of you being wrong.
I supported.
Like being wrong.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Proof exactly. I don't like being wrong, and in fact, I mean, you try being wrong to thousands of listeners. It's not easy. It's not easy. But you know, you eventually get over it.
When?
You know, I don't know. Maybe it's all accumulating, and I'm becoming more paranoid about it all the times I'm being wrong. But
every time you get picked on.
Yeah, every time I get picked on. But still, I mean, even then, when you are wrong and you are proven fantastically wrong and you accept the truth, I think in a certain regard, you feel a lot better from it. Because you look at a guy like Ken Miller, who's trying desperately to make his theology work with his science. And in fact, he now has like this, I feel like there's a certain kind of arrogance about what he's saying. Because although he admits saying, well, this doesn't prove it, it seems to be an intellectual justification in order for him to be able to fit all of these seemingly contradictory pieces of evidence together. Like, he needs to have, even though he says, well, faith and science operate in different realms, he still needs a bit of science in his faith. He cannot be 100% for faith, even though he's probably like 80% or even 90%. But there's that in his back pocket, being a serious scientist, he needs at least some justification. This is why the God in the gap argument is so terrible. I'm like, if your God exists only in the gap, why is he only in the gap? Why is he so unseen? Why can you show no evidence? And why is even your own evidence, weak, so weak that you have to admit that it doesn't even fucking prove it? I'm like, wow.
But that's the thing, though. They do have evidence. I think this whole idea of faith is, we need to talk about that idea of faith. Because nobody really believes in God entirely based on faith. They believe in God based on their personal experiences,
sure,
based on the literature.
Sure.
The literature that God wrote that says that he exists.
That he's, and the infallible literature that says that he's real.
You know, I think I want to really address the idea that nobody believes in God based on faith. Nobody. So he's not special in any way. They didn't need evidence. Lots of people need evidence. He just needs his evidence to be scientific. Some people need their evidence to be, you know, from personal experience. Some people need their evidence to be based in the Bible. He's just using science to explain some of what he's trying to say. He's fucking wrong, but that's what he's using.
And that's why it's so painful to read it. I had trouble, you know, and I understand that part of it is, and you can see yourself doing that, like go out and read an article about something you disagree fundamentally with, and it's difficult to try to maintain at least an open mind enough so that you are absorbing what they're saying without you interjecting your own belief. It's like the only way I was able to kind of like usually compensate for that is I was wagging my head back and forth, being like, no, no, this is wrong. You know, it's like the only way that my body was actually having a physical reaction at so much wrongness, especially so much wrongness from someone you admire. You know, I'm like, I just want to sit down with Ken and ask, like, seriously, dude? The anthropic principle and quantum fucking physics. This is what you're using to justify your beliefs? That's what every fucking new age jackass uses.
Oh, well, we don't understand everything about the universe. Quantum mechanics is really weird, which means that homeopathy works. What?
Don't have him sit down with you, because he'll just fight you. Have him sit down with, like, Deepak Chopra. Because then he'll be like, oh, shit, is that what I sound like? Fuck, I'm done with this. I'm atheist.
it wasn't Deepak Chopra in Calgary, actually? We saw a little,
I think,
couple
he's in Calgary posters today.
Let's go egg his hotel room. Goddamn Deepak Chopra.
Totally serious. You know what? If you're serious, I could totally set that
okay
up.
Well, you know what? Maybe we'll think about it later. I'd actually, maybe for the bonus show, I can talk about Deepak Chopra a little bit, because there's a lot to say about that, Jagumo. But you know what? Let's.
Yeah, how does it feel? The same week that Deepak Chopra comes into town, the good atheist comes into town. Maybe just,
ooh,
the balance.
Yeah, if only I was, say, 1/100,000th famous as Deepak Chopra, then maybe it would have some kind of significance. It's like, yeah, not so much here, you know? I mean, he's got the big guns of media. Meanwhile, I got a pellet gun of podcasting. Pow, pow.
Hey, pellet guns still hurt.
They do hurt. They sting. Okay, let's talk about something else. This is really funny. The Vatican issued a guideline. Like, I guess every once in a while they send out a newsletter telling their priests what they can and cannot do. Because that's the way it is with any institution, right? They tell you what to do. And one of the things that I thought was really quite funny was they were telling priests that are on cruise ships, because there are some companies that have full-time pastors on board. Because, I mean, I guess these trips, you're out there for a while. People want Sunday service. I guess they want to feel sinful and like pieces of shit at sea. I don't know. Anyways.
So, you're unworthy of this vacation.
You totally are. You totally
15%
are.
15% of your income.
I think tithing is at 10, but all right, 15%. Anyways, the guideline stipulates that priests are not to perform weddings out at sea. They can give blessing to newlywed couples and help celebrate their wedding anniversaries, but they are not allowed to wed anyone on a cruise ship.
Oh, why?
Well, there's no really explanation as to why.
There's no explanation.
It's
didn't
the
even
Vatican.
Try?
No, they don't need to explain. But you know what? If you think
usually
about it a little bit,
try.
No. There's a lot of things that they say that they don't try. Trust me. But I was thinking about this, and I think I figured it out. If you think about it, if you were to perform weddings at sea, I think it would be probably quite popular. You know, like a person goes on a cruise ship. I mean, who doesn't want to have a wedding during your honeymoon, right? Pretty sweet. And plus, if you have like a whole bunch of guests that can be there with you but don't have to hang out with you the entire time, you know what I mean? Like a cruise ship wedding would be pretty badass. But the problem with that is that, you know, church attendance all over the place is going down all the time. And you have to believe that weddings are still a major fucking cash cow for, you know, Catholic churches. That if they didn't have that anymore, if they were starting to compete against other priests that were basically operating on a cruise ship that wasn't being rented and none of the monies was going to the church, then there would be it wouldn't be as sweet. So I think that it's an entirely... an economic thing. Saying like, we want weddings to happen in the church, definitely it's a matter of money. Because look, do you not think that the Catholic Church loves money? I mean, have you seen the Vatican? There's like gold everywhere, gigantic chandeliers. Like in the Vatican, you can fit a Boeing 747 wing to wing tip in the place where they're always giving the communion and shit. That's huge. That's massive. And it's meant to, it costs a lot of money to have that. They love money. I mean, think about, remember back in the, was it the 15th or 16th century when they started selling indulgences? Do you know what indulgences
are?
Oh,
yes. Yeah.
I mean, the first thing, the printing press gets invented. And the next thing you know, they're printing out indulgences en masse. You don't even want to know how rich the church got as soon as they were able to massively produce
indulgences. I think that there's a museum in Calgary where they actually have like old metal indulgences on display. You can actually go see them.
I want indulgences, you know? I think just to frame one, I would love one, just kind of an old school one. It's like I would love to have the Sinner's Bible. You ever heard of the Sinner's Bible?
Think so.
The Sinner's Bible this is one of the rarest Bibles that you can find in the world. There's only a few copies of it. The reason it's called the Sinner's Bible is because there's a typo in one of the Ten Commandments. And that typo is, thou shalt commit adultery. They forgot the not. That's why it's called the Sinner's Bible. And they almost destroyed every single one of the publications. I think it was published in the 1800s. Anyways, it's an extremely rare book. The last time one was sold for like $10,000 or $15,000 or something like that.
Oh, wow.
But, I mean, I love that kind of stuff. If I was a rich man with all these religious collections, I would have a Sinner's Bible and I would have like an old school indulgence from like, you know, the 16th century. Like that would be just so badass. Fucking indulgences.
Well, mostly indulgences were paper because they didn't want to actually put out much money to get money. So I think only the metal ones are left over.
Well, I mean, you have to believe that somebody just stored it in a nice dry place. I mean, the Dead Sea Scrolls are paper, aren't they? And they were still around for, you know, a couple thousand years. I'm just saying, just because it's paper doesn't mean they're all destroyed. I want one.
Somebody mail you one. That's what'll happen for your birthday or something.
Yeah, there you go.
Somebody mail Jacob an indulgence.
Please, I want one.
Or make one. That's what I think is a better idea. You know, if you can't find an old indulgence, then make one out of cardboard and glue and macaroni and mail it to Jacob for his birthday.
Maybe I should just make good atheist indulgences and sell those. Maybe that's lucrative. I don't know.
I think that would be the least lucrative thing.
You think so? Okay. I mean, it's not like it costs me a lot. They're just pieces of paper saying you can say 15 science, say science 15 times and you're forgiven or I don't know what. All right. Let's cover the last topic, which is that a new Pew poll found that young children are less religious than their parents. In fact, of the people they surveyed, roughly 1 in 4 said that they were either atheist, agnostic, or not religious, which is fairly high. That's like 25%. Compared that to about 12% of the adult population that is either atheist, agnostic, or non-believer. So the trend, if you want to say that it's a trend, is the fact that we are becoming less and less religious. Now, you and I, we know that we almost intuitively know that this trend is so because, I mean, a significant portion of even the people who visit the site or listen to the podcast are young, though I'm always perpetually surprised when it is not the only people that listen. Apparently, there are people well into their 60s that listen to the show, which blows my mind.
You know what? It's just a lot of averages, though. I mean, there's so many people who listen to the podcast. Some of them are going to be, you know, an older generation. I don't want to say old. I hate that word.
Because it's cruel.
It is cruel. I don't want to call
them
old.
The golden age.
Is elderly worse? Yeah.
I'm surprised too because I'm a total ageist. I always had this theory that I mean, this my horrible ageist theory that all the really smart old people tend to die early. Because for crying out loud, every single really old person I see is a dumbass. Like, very, very stupid. I don't understand what it is. Maybe the stupid ones live longer. I have to think they do. Because the smarter you are, the more anxieties you have. You know, when you're smart and you read the news a lot and you follow world and global events, geopolitics, I swear to God, it takes years off your life. So maybe the trick to long life is being stupid. This is just a theory.
Or maybe you just stop giving a shit what other people think of you, so you stop trying to look smart. So those people are just as intelligent as everyone else, but they're not walking around using 50-cent words. Oh, I'm being quiet. They're not walking around using 50-cent words trying to convince people that they're intelligent. So you don't notice they're intelligent. I think that'd be a much better explanation. Not that everyone.
Or maybe you don't care. Maybe you don't care about impressing anybody and be like, I spent my whole life impressing people. I just want to take my time in line and pay with pennies. You're like, oh.
You know, because I think that is the most common thing about the elderly. They just don't seem to give a shit what you think, period. I suppose if you're using Depends, that's at that point you're like, I don't care what people think of me. I am wandering around in my own shit.
Is that really? Wandering around, I'm sure when you take a crap and you have an adult diaper, you change it. It's not like you're just like, I'm going to walk around this all day. I'm just going to keep it on.
You know what? I think you're wrong.
You think so?
I think that there are lots of people who were like, screw it.
Oh, you're
I've taken public transit.
Yeah, but maybe it just happened during the bus ride. You know, it's very bumpy. I can imagine that it sort of like travels down the bowel or whatever. Anyways, let's stop talking about, let's stop alienating the individuals that are, 50 and plus that listen to the show.
You know what? I'm sure that those people don't walk around with dirty adult
diapers.
I think, you know what, the people who probably listen to this podcast who are older are probably the distinguished gentlemen and females.
I'm hoping
ass kissing right now. I'm backpedaling.
Yeah, it's true. Like, I'm hoping that when I start traveling more, that I'm going to be able to meet some of the older fans, because I get a lot of the younger ones usually talk to me because they're either on Facebook or they're messaging me through with email and stuff like that, and obviously they're more tech savvy, and it takes a certain degree of tech savvy to get in touch with me.
Well, you know what? Okay, if there are any older people who are listening to the podcast who don't want to come to your birthday party on the 28th at the Soda at, I think it starts at 7:30 in Calgary on the 28th.
It's a plug.
Plug. Then, you know, you and I are going to that Science Cafe thing on Tuesday. That might be more up their alley.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, so if you're in Cowtown and you are not interested in coming to my birthday party, you guys can still email me, jacobforte@gmail.com. I want to hook up with people. I want to meet you guys. Trust me when I say it's good therapy to go out there and meet people and say, like, why do you like the show and stuff like that. Like, I love getting feedback. I don't get a lot of feedback from people. I hit record. I put it out there. And then I just hope that everybody likes it. Most of the time, I always message you saying, I think the last show sucked.
And I'm like, what are you talking about? That's my job, actually. It's just to talk you up after your shows.
Well, you get slightly paranoid whenever you record a show because you don't remember anything you said. But you know for sure that you fucked up. You're like, I said something and I wasn't sure when I said it. But when you say it, you have to sound confident in what you say. Otherwise, you'd be like, is this true? Confidence is usually what sort of like I try to write on. So at the end of it, you're like, damn it. Lots of people are listening to this and I don't know what they like. I mean, not that I want to change everything according to what a few people enjoy, but it's always nice to know, hey, you know, if a person says, oh, I found your show really funny, and you're like, really? Because I listened to the whole thing. I didn't laugh once.
It's because of you. I don't tend to laugh at myself either. But we're doing tons of cool stuff.
Yeah, well, I'm here for about 3 weeks.
Yeah. So if you want to come to Magic Cafe, we're going stargazing at the Science Center one night. People can join us for things. Just email, and then you're more than welcome to come. And
well, I want to get more into this habit because I'm also, like I said, I'm planning on traveling more. I'm going to North Carolina April 7th to the University of Greensboro and going to give an atheist talk there. Hopefully, I'm going to also meet some fans over there. And you know, I want to do this more. I'm going to try to record it to put myself out there to all these atheist conference organizers and say, fucking book me. I'm going to give you a good show. And people like listening to me for some fucking mysterious reason, even though I curse like a sailor.
I think it's because of the rhythm of your voice.
Is it?
Well, when I first started listening to the podcast, it was because it was not, it was, the rhythm was nice and consistent. So
oh,
I could
flowy.
Listen to it while I was doing other things, and I would
and
know
I didn't
when
have
to
listen.
Listen.
Yeah, I didn't have to listen to you. He's like, oh, he's droning on. Wait a minute, what is he saying now?
Exactly. Because when
oh
you get
upset.
Oh, my
God, I'm a droner.
When you get upset about something, you're very loud.
Yes,
so
that's
you
true.
Would never miss the important points. And so...
I should just be loud all the time then. Oh, it'll be a bit too intense though.
No, you'll be way too intense. People will be like, "Oh, I listened to 10 minutes of Good Atheist and then I had to take a nap."
Yep, that's right. That's always too why when I do the outro, I try to do kind of like something that calms you down a little bit, because the way I figure it is that you kind of want to have that nice little smooth the show's over and you guys can stop being mad. Because how many people right now are saying in their car, they're doing their workout, and they're like, these religious people piss me the fuck off. Come on, Jacob, give them shit, yeah. Because at the end of it, they want to be like, ah, it felt so good. Someone gave someone shit about their stupid beliefs. And trust me, man, it's frustrating. You know, sometimes you just want to grab a person. You're saying, why are you such an idiot? But you don't want to be rude. And I mean, a lot of times whenever you say someone, oh, you're an idiot, they tend to think, oh, you're just demeaning me and you're not really paying attention to me and I'm not really that much of an idiot. I'm like, I'll admit it. Most of the time when I'm calling someone an idiot, I'm not really saying that, hey, you don't know anything, you're generally fucking retarded. But don't you think that we're all idiots about something? Like, why are we not allowed to use this word? Why is as soon as you're saying, hey, you're being an idiot, why is that impolite? Huh? Obviously, there are times when you're going to be an idiot. It should be okay if someone points that out. No?
Well, when we are debating, you get angry at me when I demean your intelligence. So I think that's probably the reason why you can't call people idiots, because it's not polite.
Okay, but at the same time, the way you do it is just unbelievably cruel. I mean, like, well, Jacob, I just don't think that you know what you're talking about. And I'm like, what?
I don't see what
you have this. You admit it yourself. You're like, because of the time you spent as a teacher, when you're talking, it's a school teacher thing saying like, well, Jacob, I really don't think that you've researched this very well, and I disagree. And I'm like, well, you can disagree about my point here, but just making a blanket statement of saying, I don't really think that you're educated about this, I'm like, I'm sorry, but that does not prove your point. That just makes you mean. Why do you got to be so mean?
I have to be so careful. I mean, that is really how I learned how to win an argument was when I was
you're a bully.
Teaching. I'm not a
Look,
bully.
I'm a bully, too. You don't think that I bully people when I debate with them?
I'm so not a bully.
You are
a
bully.
I'm a preschool teacher.
Oh, my goodness. I'm sure... you know what? I'm going to quiz your friends while I'm down here. I'm going to say, hey, has Carissa ever bullied you in order to win an argument?
That's not fair.
Nah, has she ever brought something up that you said, like, years ago during an argument, saying, like, well, you had said previously this during another debate, which is totally wrong. Therefore, you're wrong on this one. What? Huh? Where did that come from?
You know what?
Bam!
You're making crazy assumptions. You can ask all my friends as much as you want.
Yeah, we're going to find out.
I'm going to just let me call them first.
Yeah, so basically my general point was that I think that to some degree there is kind of like there is a nice relaxing thing when you're at least able to be a little bit mad, even if it is by proxy through me. I guess I'm a very mad person.
See, where I get satisfaction from it is that I'm more of a religious sympathizer. I don't know if that's a good term for it. But when somebody's like, oh, let me read your tarot, or, you know, oh, I think it's the universe that brought us together, my first thought is, all right. You know, I'm kind of like...
I'm glad that's your first thought. My first thought is, I need to get the fuck out of here.
No, I understand. I mean, I've been there. I know
you've been
that
there and done that, huh? I've
been there and done that. I know how intelligent people can be swayed by religion. It's a nice thought. Some people just need to feel powerful. Some people don't have enough information. They haven't. They're not as interested in reason. And you know what? I respect that. It's hard.
I respect the fact that you're not into reason.
I
wouldn't
do.
Say I respect it. I understand it.
I understand it.
You know? The same
I'm
kind of way that
okay
I can understand a person
it.
Who has a really bad drug habit. I understand. I mean, there's plenty of incentives when people are you know, to do drugs. And then once you're kind of on that bandwagon, all of a sudden you just can't get off and it sucks. So I'm like, I always understand when someone is, say, always on opium. But at the same time, I don't necessarily have to say, I respect your choice, drug head. No, I don't have to do that. I could say, I really don't respect your choice, but you're free to make it as much as you want. And sure, I may be a judgmental jackass about it, but who gives a fuck what I think? Do you really need to have me approve of what you do? If that's the case, like, seriously, you're not going to make it. because I'm going to tell you exactly what I think.
I would love to be as angry as you are. I think it'd be more satisfying. But
you really
I,
think so?
I'm just not. I'm just, I just, under, I'm too close to the problem. I'm like, oh, that was me. Every, like, because I was the full gamut. Everywhere from avid Catholic to surefire witch, you know?
She's a witch!
I'm always a witch! I came out of the broom closet.
Well, I always thought to myself, if for some weird reason this world were suddenly to kind of like turn topsy-turvy and all of a sudden, bam, you know, Canada is a theocracy and most of the West is. Mm. And, you know, the internet never forgets anything you did. So I could theoretically have written my own death sentence for my, you know, lack of religious belief.
God, you know
right
what?
Through that. And you... You have just done that yourself because you shall not suffer a witch. It says right there in the Old Testament. You're supposed to kill all witches.
You know what? That might actually happen because if the
That might
children...
actually happen?
No, I'm just saying there's I can
there's
see
a,
it.
There's a chance.
I can
suppose.
See the chance because people are getting less and less religious. And what do you happen when you take I mean this is going to be a horrible analogy because everybody's going to think I heard bunnies. But what happens when you back a bunny into a corner and you scare the shit out of it? It flips the fuck out.
What does it have to do with
anything? Well, what happens when anything is close to death? Uh-huh. It is at its most violent. It should be feared the most.
Right.
And when the Catholic Church is starting to figure out, and the religion in general is starting to figure out that it's on its last leg, we should all us crazy atheists should be really scared because they're still really powerful.
Well, what do you think fundamentalism is? For me, I remember that Karen Armstrong argued that fundamentalism is a response to the modern world. And I partially agree with her, but I think really what it is a response to the increased marginalization of religion. So if you're being marginalized, then the odds are you're going to find the only respite that you have because you find modernism and sort of like, you know, completely anathema to your religious beliefs, then the only other solution is for you to be a fundamentalist, to reject the modern world, and to believe, to go back to a literal interpretation of your holy texts. And of course, they're scary. All fundamentalists are scary. I mean, you will fear fundamentalists. That is normal. But I think that what happens is that they don't, the fundamentalists, it's very rare that they'll be able to sort of like take everything over. Because the great thing about fundamentalists is that they hate other fundamentalists as well. It's not like it's a very well, you know, coordinated thing. Most of the time, even when you find, say, conservatives and fundamentalist Christians or evangelical Christians coming together, it's because they'll have a few points that they agree on. But really, if push came to shove and they were finally able to make some choices and decisions, they would combat each other like crazy because they're like, well, we don't believe in this. Well, you don't believe in this. Sacrilege, murder, die, brah. So that's the great thing about fundamentalism is that they burn so bright that they tend to just extinguish one another when you let them. We just don't want to let them because we don't want to let them have any power. They're fucking scary. They're crazy. They don't subscribe to any system of thought that is logical or well thought out. We're just like, you guys are nuts. And we don't want you in on this party. Like, you're not invited to the leader's table because you're just too crazy. Even though they invite themselves all the time. They like to invite themselves, don't they? Fuckers.
Speaking of leader's table, I can't... What's your prediction as to the first, like, atheist prime minister and or president?
What, like atheist prime minister in Canada?
Yeah,
like,
or anybody in North America. Like, what's going to be the first... major atheist holder of office because we got the black thing happened.
Yeah,
they
that,
beat us.
The black thing.
They beat us.
What the? Hello. Black we just learned something about you today.
Oh yeah. Pick on me, fine. But Chris you know what
Edwards.
I mean. You know,
racist.
You know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Well, look. When are we going to see an atheist leader in a major, you know, as a president, say, in the United States? Probably not within my lifetime. I don't foresee it because a lot of people still have this weird impression that religion makes you more moral.
What was that study that was done where who would you elected a candidate that was otherwise qualified who was a woman, a man, Hispanic,
gay,
and we were on par. We were on par with Middle Eastern.
I actually think that the last one I saw is they would rather elect someone who was Muslim than an atheist. I mean, I definitely think that there's a lot of people out there that have absolutely no idea what it is like to not believe in God. I mean, think about mm-hmm. everyone around you in your whole entire life has believed in God, professes to it, talks about it all the fucking time, and then you're just going about your day, and you talk to someone you've known your whole life, and they're like, oh yeah, but I don't believe in God. And you'd be like, so, like, it would blow your fucking mind. I'm sure it happens every once in a while.
I don't know if I have a single friend who doesn't know that I'm a big scary atheist.
Yeah, but they know that now. I'm just saying that there are plenty of places where individuals don't advertise it. I mean, for Christ's sake, you have panties that say atheist on the back. Obviously, you're
how many people do you think get to see my panties?
Well, everybody that goes on the site.
Oh, I suppose, yeah.
What do you mean? You're like a model. How many pictures of you naked are there out there?
Yeah, but they don't get to see my panties. They get to see me naked.
Maybe I shouldn't tell anybody on the radio show, because now they're going to type your name and be like, hey, Carissa Hendricks, yeah, I'm going to go check her out naked. I don't like this. I'm going to delete this. I'm going to edit this out. Okay, you know what? Let's wrap up the show. We've got there's it's already fairly long, 45 minutes in.
Some of that is stuff you got to edit out.
With the music and everything else like that.
Oh, I suppose.
Anyways, well, sorry for the delay, everybody. I mean, the traveling part kind of threw me out. You'll notice if there's a slight change in the audio quality, I've gone back to using the old USB mic because I'm on the road and I can't have my super pimped out, crazy recording setup that I love. But you know what? I'm pretty sure compared to most of the other podcasts, it still sounds probably superior.
Oh, yeah.
I just hate the idea that anybody out there is listening and hearing a little bit of interference or a shh. You know what I mean? I hate that. I'm like one of those audiophile guys that just loves clean sound. That's why you get it. Now, before we go, I'd like to remind you that if you enjoy the show, we encourage you to be a patron of the site. Now, you will gain access to the backlog of shows. We're up to number 42, so that's 42 episodes. And for the next year, you'd get a bonus show, which, if I take, say, 2 or 3 weeks off, would still be close to 49 to 50 shows. So that is almost 100 shows for $20 a year. That's about 2 pennies a show. So if you think about it, it's pretty cheap, and that's what allows us to keep doing this thing, and we appreciate your patronage. All right, with that, I'd like to thank my special guest, Carissa Hendricks.
Oh, no problem.
And we'll catch everybody for the bonus show in a few days. With that, I'm Jacob Forte.
Oh, and I'm Carissa Hendricks.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.